Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome to our Village Board regular scheduled meeting on February 10th, 2025 at 7 o'clock. I'd ask the clerk to take the roll call, please.
Trustee Johnson.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Wait, she's not here.
No.
We'll add her. We'll add her. Okay.
Call your name as well.
Oh, me. Go ahead.
President,
I'm here.
Ducey.
Sorry. Trustee Brennan, you're on the Zoom call. I trust that you're away for work. That's correct, right? You're.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. So, I'll ask a trustee to move and second to allow Trustee Brennan to participate telephonically.
Motion to allow Trustee Brennan to participate telephonically.
Okay. Due to work.
Yeah, due to work.
Yes. Second.
Work.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here. Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Okay, welcome. All right, so with that, I'd ask everyone to please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right. Before we get to the citizens' comments and the elected official comments, we have some special presentations, which is always the fun part of our job. And the first one is the swearing in of the fire lieutenant, Paul Zipperich. So, Chief, do you want to take? I almost can't recognize you with your hat, and I'll be honest with you.
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad.
No. It's all good. It's all good.
All right. It's an exciting evening for the River Forest Fire Department. We've got a couple of things on the agenda, one of which is the promotion of Lieutenant Paul Zipperich. A little something about Paul. Paul joined the River Forest Fire Department on February 16th. 2008. I got to get my glasses on. In his nearly 22 years with the department, Paul has held multiple certifications throughout the Village Department of Public Health and the Illinois Office of the State Fire Marshal. These certifications and education include being a licensed paramedic with the state of Illinois, a technical rescue technician, and also a member of the Division 11 Technical Rescue Team. He's a hazardous material technician, lead CPR instructor. He has a certification as company fire officer, and he also has his bachelor's degree in management. In between furthering his education, Paul made time to perform as one of the department's mechanics as well. He was integral in the development and growth of our CPR program and has donated many hours of his own time to creating and touching up some of the beautiful artwork along the railroad tracks on Central and Hawthorne. His latest work of art can be found at Thatcher and Hawthorne. Paul did not produce this artwork alone. He worked alongside his beautiful wife, Julie, who's here tonight. Julie somehow found spare time to donate between raising their five children, Nathan, Ashley, Natalie, Joseph, and Jason, not to mention running her own business, Fitness for Change. So I'd like you to please join me in welcoming Paul Zipperich to the position of lieutenant. This promotion is generally the byproduct of Paul and his family's hard work and selfless service. Yep. And Paul's mom's here as well.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
You want to come on up?
Yeah. Take some pictures as well. We got a swearman. Good.
You going to do it, Jim?
We got the paperwork.
Have to do a little bit of paperwork for this. Can you repeat after me? I, Paul Zipperich.
Paul Zipperich.
Having been appointed to the office of fire lieutenant.
Office of fire lieutenant.
In the village of River Forest.
In the village of River Forest.
In the county of Cook.
County of Cook.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of.
Faithfully discharge the duties of.
The office of fire lieutenant to the best of my ability.
The office of fire lieutenant to the best of my ability.
Congratulations.
Yeah. That dang pen. So we'll let them take pictures too. You make those coats too nice. So, yeah, good job.
I like to take some pictures.
Paul, you can say a few words and take some pictures with your lovely family. So, you know, we want to make sure we get this captured. So maybe your family can come up and take a couple pictures with you.
Sure.
And we'll get out of the picture.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you for your service. Congratulations.
Want to take a couple pictures?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, you're spread out.
Well, before you leave, Paul, I mean, I want to say thank you for all the wonderful, great work you do for on behalf of River Force, of course, but the artwork is just fabulous, and we do really appreciate your effort and your time and the work that you put in that artwork. It's just beautiful, so thank you.
Appreciate everyone's trust and confidence. I'm looking forward to this. For the record, Julie's the artist.
Well, Julie, thank you so much. We appreciate you. Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. Okay.
You want me to dive right into the...
Sure. Go ahead, Chief.
The next thing. So also on the agenda tonight is something that we're very proud of. Over the last couple of years, we've been... the fire department's been looking for opportunities to partner with different organizations and agencies in the area. And we ended up... coming into a great partnership with Concordia College, their nursing program there. So Deputy Chief Wohenick's been very instrumental in creating that relationship with them. So I'm going to have him give his little presentation here and explain what we've been doing over the last year or two and what we continue to want to keep doing moving forward. So, Dave.
Good evening. So, as Chief mentioned, we've been kind of reaching out to partners in the community. One of the biggest ones so far has been Concordia. We've been able to partner with them in a few aspects. I'll kind of go through here. So, one of our initiatives is to... Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
So, we have the Director of Nursing, Kristen. We have Lori, one of the other instructors at Concordia. And then Tony, he's a simulation specialist over at Concordia.
Okay. Thank you.
So... when we first approached Concordia, it was more of just kind of a conversation about CPR, trying to get some CPR initiatives in the community, building some resiliency by having more people who are trained with CPR throughout the community. So by doing that, we tried to reach out to them. They had a bunch of nursing students coming in, so it was kind of a easy access to these students. After a couple classes, we kind of got to talking about some other things we could possibly collaborate on, and one thing kind of led to another. We've had a relationship with Concordia for a little while now. We've done some touch of trucks and worked with the child care center at Columbus Hall for a little while, but this really kind of took off into something more than what we've had before in the past. So Concordia opened its nursing facility 2 years ago, 23. Wow. If you haven't seen it, it's quite impressive. Kristen kind of built it from the ground up, but it's basically a mini ER inside of Concordia on the third floor at Columbus Hall. It's very impressive. It houses a few hospital beds that simulates an ER. It has actual inpatient rooms where they have a labor and delivery mannequin, some other mannequins. They have children that can simulate drowning scenarios, seizures, strokes, hemorrhagic issues, and cerebral issues. It's quite impressive. It's things that we want to train on as paramedics, so we're ready for that moment, but it's things we don't always have access to because we just don't have the funds to buy mannequins that can do all the things that Concordia now has in their facility. So as we began talking and providing CPR, Kristen had a great idea. She said, hey, why don't you guys come start working in our sim lab? So one of our younger firefighters just took over as our most recent EMS coordinator. He's going to be spearheading that and setting up some simulations for our firefighters to get some more hands-on training in the sim lab while on duty. To that end, Kristen and I had sat down and talked one day about, well, she has this camp she wanted to do. She has this idea. So how can we bring this camp to the community? So not really saying no to anything, I said, sure, why not? Let's give it a try. And then we actually sat down and kind of went over the nuts and bolts of it. And she already had a bunch of ideas on the paper. She really laid the foundation for what this program was going to be. We just kind of put some sprinkles on that cake, but it really turned into something beautiful and something great. So if you don't know, we had this Envision camp that took place June 24th to 27th. It will be taking place again, and I'll have Kristen maybe speak a little bit to that. She was able to secure a grant to hold another camp that will also incorporate a high school evolution the month after that one. So it'll be roughly the same time next year. June 23rd will actually be the next camp. This one sold out in a matter of minutes. It never even really made it online to be advertised. It was already sold out within minutes through the OPEF Foundation, the Oak Park Educational Foundation, who was the other partner in this. So fast forwarding a little bit. Camp went great. I'm going to get to the video because it's something worth seeing. But Kristen had this thought like, hey, we have this International Medical Simulations and Healthcare Conference that kind of devotes time to acknowledging people who do great things in the community, who set up simulations for providers, and who show off what it is to be a medical worker. So she submitted our presentation basically to this committee. So we ended up at joining in Florida and Orlando to present what we accomplished here in Concordia at the International Medical Simulations and Healthcare Conference. We had approximately 50 people in our group from all around the country asking us a bunch of questions. About an hour-long presentation. It went really great. A lot of good feedback. About a quarter of the room stayed around and asked questions after the presentation was over. One of them was the dean up at Harper College, who is very looking forward to mimicking the success we had here at Concordia in River Forest. So, enjoy the show. So what you're looking at, the first 2 minutes of the video, are basically there is a live extrication where he brought in a car from O'Hare, donated a car to us to bring in. Public Works came and smashed it up a little bit for us with an unloader. And then we were able to actually extricate a patient out of there. And they were able to use training that they learned the first day in getting their CPR certifications and their Stop the Bleed training. And they all came out of that class actually certified both nationally in Stop the Bleed and CPR. So that's putting on tourniquets, packing wounds, stopping bleeding when you find arterial bleeds. So the extrication, they were able to kind of get their hands on the tools that we use on the scene as firefighters. Thank you.
I don't know if they meant that.
And after that, they were able to kind of experience what it was to be a firefighter, get on the rigs, see the other equipment that we have that we use on a daily basis and why we have what we have. We kind of got in the back of the ambulance, went through the tools we have in the back of the ambulance. So the goal was to create an experience where there was an incident and more or less a patient. And we take the patient from time of injury and through the progression of that patient getting better once we get up into the lab. So these students not only did CPR training, Stop the Bleed training, some first responder training. Then later on, they came upstairs, they learned skills. The second day after the MVC, they were able to get up there and they actually did pleural decompressions where you put a needle into somebody's lung to relieve the pressure in a case of a collapsed lung. They actually did some time learning how to do intubations with Lieutenant Boyd. The slide that, or the video that was showing me, I was teaching them how to do interosseous placement. So it's when you put a needle in somebody's bone to give them fluids or drugs. So these kids actually experienced that. These were not show needles. These were not training needles. These were actually needles that we use on people. These were very sharp instruments. So we were very careful to make sure that they got the full experience, but in a safe and controlled manner. As it progressed, they started learning suturing. They started giving injections, how to start IVs. And then they had at the very end, they had an escape room, which unfortunately I missed that day. Kristen will have to give you a little brief overview of that, but it really sounded cool. And I'm hoping to get into it next year. But the gist of it was there was a train derailment in the third day where they had the mass casualty with all the smoke that they were showing, and they had to collect all these patients and bring them to safety. And so this patient was exposed to some unknown chemical. And then they had to come up with this escape room. They basically had to come up with the antidote to whatever this patient was exposed to before they turned into a zombie. So the kids absolutely loved it. There was some great feedback from parents. There it is. So these were just a few of them that I could fit on the slides. I wasn't going to inundate everybody with all of them. But just kids coming back every day saying how great it was. If anybody's has kids around, I have a 12-year-old, and when you ask them, what'd you do today? Yeah, the answer inevitably is, I don't know, or nothing important. I don't know, I don't remember. These kids were coming back and actually talking to their parents and telling them things. So that, to me, was very impressive to hear that kids were talking to their parents about what they experienced that day. So this was truly a team effort. We had PD, River Forest Police Department, came out. They showed our support. Fire department, obviously, many of the people in this room even showed their support by being part of the extrication or the treatment of the patients. It was top to bottom, a complete effort. I mean, Public Works, like I said, was involved with the unloader. It was truly the whole community who put this on with Concordia hosting it. It was truly awesome. These are a few more things we've done with Concordia over the past few years. The CPR classes I mentioned, fire simulation training we've done utilizing the parking structure because we could drag lines, we could do things, we could charge hose lines, do things that we can't do in normal residential settings because we do too much damage. So they've allowed us access to their facilities in order to do training that we couldn't really do anywhere else outside of building a burn tower somewhere in town. Lieutenant Boyd and I did a STEM presentation at Julian Middle School, again with Concordia collaboration, where we presented smoke, science of smoke and fire to kids over at Julian Middle School, with Concordia. And Concordia presented with how to treat burn wounds at that as well. So going forward, we're developing more programs, hoping to get some more. Some of the things we brought back actually from Orlando, we're going to try to enact them here. So more to come. We're exploring some senior services programs, maybe with Concordia and the nursing program in the future, very near future, hopefully. But I couldn't have done any of this without the support of all these firefighters in this room today. My lieutenants and the staff at Concordia, they've been absolutely great. They are truly an asset to our community. They're helping us put better paramedics into our community, mm-hmm. better trained paramedics for everybody in this community and the surrounding community. So I can't thank them enough for allowing us to be partners with them. Any questions about anything that we talked about?
I don't have any questions, but I have a comment. There's a residence here in River Forest. Their daughter was in college, and she did have a heart failure. And her colleague, while they were, you know, on campus, her colleague was with her. And when she went into heart failure, the colleague knew how to do CPR and actually saved her life. And it's, you know, someone I know very, very well. So when you see something like that, you really, really appreciate what these classes can do, because they really can be effective and save lives. So for that, I whatever more we can do to, you know, create more CPR classes, create more health awareness, we should do it. Yeah, come on up to the podium, please.
Thank you very much for having us tonight. We are so, you know, absolutely blessed to be part of this community and to know these amazing people. They are just, they've enriched our lives and our ability to really push the envelope with our nursing program in a way that we never thought was possible. So it was just such a happy accident to meet them when we did. And we're just looking very much forward to the future and what it can, you know, it can bring. As Dave was saying, you know, we're hoping to, you know, collaborate even more outside of just even camp. In fact, just recently, Lieutenant Boyd came to teach a class for us, or they both did actually, on EKG interpretation, understanding the heart rhythms, yeah. In a way that, honestly, as nurses, we just don't work in that environment. We work in labor and delivery and psychiatrics and different places. And so having them as experts in their field come in and teach it to our students was phenomenal. And bridging those gaps too between nursing and paramedics and having them both understand each other in a very different way is really important to all of us. And then Lieutenant Boyd was able to come and actually run a simulated mock code, a code blue that you might, you know, have heard mm-hmm. of like in a hospital. And it was just phenomenal to have him there and have the students really step up in a very different way. We're just so thankful. And I just really appreciate all that they do, and yeah. just happy to be here to support them.
Great. Well, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Glad you guys are partners. Thanks. All right. Well, thanks. All right. Well, that concludes our presentation portion. So feel free to leave if you'd like. I wouldn't want to have you stay. If you don't want to, don't worry. We don't get insulted when people leave. We understand. All right, with that, our next is citizen comment. So did everyone sign? I got you, Beth, down here. Is that, you want to talk? Yep. No, not now, but I'm just saying, I got you on the list. Okay. All right, so I think, Margie or Patty, you don't have a subject, nor Beth. I'm assuming it's the contract approval, right? Okay, so we'll just wait until we get to that, which will be quick. So I'll just move on to elected official comments and announcements. So, why don't we start with, Trustee Bogner? Do you mind? Start? What? Yeah, I've got you here too, Tom. And yeah, we'll get to that, the next agenda item, frankly. Well, it's the consent agenda, but hopefully that will go fast. It's just now we're going to do our comments and then get to the consent and then get to that item.
So I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. As we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. And I have no other comments.
Okay, thank you, Erica. Lisa?
Sure. I actually picked up my mail. I was out of town for a while, and in it was the electronic waste collection postcard. So we, electronic waste collection is Monday, March 17th through Wednesday, March 19th. You have to submit a request online by scanning the QR code or contacting LRS directly. Electronics must be curbside by 7 a.m., a maximum of 7 items. per request, and that includes a maximum of 2 TVs or monitors. You have to submit your request by March 12th. So I just want to make sure everybody's aware of it. It's a really great thing. So just recycling, reuse is top of mind for me today, because I'm preparing to present to the Echo Kids at Lincoln School, the 3rd and 4th graders. So we are going to go through trash, that my trash actually, so that we can recycle, reduce, recycle, and reuse. And this is one of the things, what to do with your electronics. So let's all take advantage. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thanks.
Okay. Yes, good evening. Basically, I just want to share a pleasant experience I had with the Public Works Water Department. You know, I registered as well as other residents for the Water Smart, and I have noticed my water bill was going up, but then I just assumed it was the, you know, City of Chicago water prices going up. And then, of course, my family who loves to use water, even in the winter, I thought it was part of that. But then the village, when I reached out to the village and the village acknowledged, looked through the Water Smart protocol that I have as well, and noticed that my water bills were going up in an unusual manner. So they actually talked to me. They actually asked and were willing to come to my house to see if they would identify any leakage. And of course, my first reaction was there's no leaks whatsoever in my house, unless it was outside of my building or my residence. And they said, why don't you let us come over? And of course, I said, yes. Well, it turned out that the leak was actually coming from my furnace humidifier.
Yeah.
That was broken, and it kept funneling water through the machine, but in my sewer. So I never saw an actual water leak. And so I actually had my furnace guy come out, and of course he disputed that it was his fault, but of course showed him where the water was coming from. But I was just surprised, pleasantly surprised that, the village staff also have told me they do this when they themselves identify it for other residents as well. So it's not just a service that one can request. If they identify it, they will actually contact you as well and offer, if you'd like, they would come and see and check to see if there's any leakages going on that you may not see, which I did not. So again, I want to thank Kathy, Mike, Josh for helping identify this, helping me get through it. And I've been saving water since then. So,
and money.
Yes, and money. Yes, and water. Yes, both. Money, water, they both go together. So thank you very much for the staff, and thank you, Matt, and the village. Another sign of our village staff that do terrific great work. Job. So thank you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Good job. Okay, John?
Okay. Thank you, but nothing to add.
Okay. Katie?
I have nothing to add tonight.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
I also have nothing to add. I was going to talk about the waste collection, but Trustee Gillis so eloquently stated it and presented it. So I have no other comments.
Bob, thanks.
Great. Thanks. First of all, I want to congratulate Deputy Chief. I think that's a great program, and, you know, our community involvement. So thanks for jumping in and do it. And Chief, for your leadership and guiding the guys and ladies who take care of us every day. So thank you for that. And then a quick shout out. Jack's over there contemplating the upcoming snow. You get an opportunity, get your car off the street. It'll make it so much easier for the Public Works guys. It's supposed to hit Wednesday and Thursday, and then again on Saturday. And so the quicker we can get the guys in, quicker we can get them out and stop paying overtime. So thanks a lot.
Is that true? Quicker you're in, no overtime? Okay. Thanks, Bob. Yeah, great reminder. I don't really have much other than, I'm surprised you didn't mention it, our OPRF Civic Fair that John and I attended with some of the Oak Park trustees and president. And I really enjoyed it. It was, I think, mostly junior and senior students at OPRF. And it was a civic lesson, basically. And they asked really good questions, and we hopefully answered them for them. So it was great. And the fair was great. So So to all those that attended, thanks to the kids and thanks to all of us for being part of that. So with that, I will move on now to the consent agenda. No. Consent agenda, because this is later. So if I can get a motion and a second to move 6A and F.
Motion to approve consent agenda items A through F.
Second.
Okay, very good. Any comments, questions regarding those items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read out loud each item and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, January 27th, 2025. B, administration department report. C, monthly department report. D, accounts payable, January 2025, $2,073,334.39. E, change order for 2024 Public Works interior remodel. F, proclamation designating February 16th through February 22nd, 2025 as National Engineers Week. Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Okay, great. So the next item is unfinished business, which is 9A. If I can get a motion and a second for 9A, and then we'll ask the citizens to come up and give public testimony.
Motion to approve an exclusive listing agreement with Jones Lang LaSalle Americas and authorize the village administrator to execute the contract subject to final attorney review.
Second.
Okay, great. Thanks. All right. So, Phyllis, you're up first. I think I saw Phyllis. There you go.
Hi, Phyllis Rubin, 411 Ashland, 6B. So I just jotted down some things here, otherwise I tend to ramble. but I want to speak to this. You have apparently a motion on your in your packet that you're going to possibly vote on today to approve JLL as a broker for TIF district. I don't know if everybody knows the situation there, but this came up for a vote, I think at your last board meeting, or maybe the board meeting before, a month ago.
Yeah, we deferred it.
Right. And it went to the Ethics Commission because there was an ethics complaint about this, how this happened. The Economic Development Commission recommended JLL. However, there was a manager, I believe, of JLL, who was on the Economic Development Commission. And so that has the appearance of a conflict of interest. I don't know how anybody else would look any differently at that. So I attended the Ethics Commission meeting to see what they would do with it. And they went into executive session, which we were sort of puzzled about. And they came out and they said that they read their mandate from the board and that they don't have the authorization to deal with it with a conflict of interest issue. Well, that sort of was a big surprise. I don't know who would be responsible for a conflict of interest complaint other than the Ethics Commission. So they have brought it that what they told us is they would bring it back to you to uncarve out the conflict of interest portion of their mandate and put it back in so that they could investigate the complaint. And that's to their credit. They're bringing it back to the board. I don't know that you're going to deal with that today. I don't know what you're doing. But it is in your hands. So I am just an average River Forest citizen. I do come to board meetings. Maybe that doesn't make me quite average, but you know, I don't know about ethics. I don't know about this. But I don't know why the Ethics Commission would not be authorized to deal with conflicts of interest. That's a big puzzle to my brain. If it doesn't lie with the Ethics Commission, it seems to lie with the board. So I would say that since this complaint is sitting there, I think if you vote to approve JLL, I think that begs the question about where the conflict of interest might be. I don't know. I think this is a problem. I think it should have gone to the Ethics Commission. They should be able to look at it and advise you on this. I want to know that you award contracts to the best choice and that you are ultra, ultra, ultra careful of anything that even looks like a conflict of interest. Because when we get into that, it can be problems for our village and us residents down the road. I don't want to bring it up again, but you know I'm thinking about Lake and Lathrop, and I think that's that kind of thing is a problem when we get into arrangements with companies or people who are live in River Forest, and we think they might be great to work for us and have contracts, but it turns out they're not. So thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Phyllis. Okay. Tom?
Good evening, Madam President, trustees. I'm Tom Hazinski. I live at 1035 Keystone River Forest. And I came here to express my concern about the recently filed ethics complaint regarding the Economic Development Commission's recommendation to award a contract to market the village-owned property at 7600 Madison. In my view, this complaint is unwarranted. At best, it represents unnecessary delay in the honest and sincere efforts of the EDC and the village board to move forward with an important economic development initiative. At worst, it represents a baseless attack on the integrity of the EDC volunteer members. I think the public record clearly shows that the EDC acted according to the highest ethical standards. They ran a competitive process. They had clear selection criteria on which they made their recommendation to the board. They acted with full public disclosure and strict avoidance of any conflict of interest. So gratuitous attacks on those who voluntarily serve on village commissions have consequences. They discourage participation, and they cloud the experience of those who have committed voluntarily their time and efforts to make the village a better place. In recent years across the country, we've seen the poisoning of public discourse, with those in opposition to others as enemies with bad intentions. Instead, we should focus on honest disagreements over policies. We have little power to change the national discourse, but we are empowered to change it in our community. And to this end, I urge my fellow River Forest residents to withdraw their ethics complaint. Thank you.
It's Tom.
Excuse me. Can I ask?
Yep.
Tom, could you tell us what's your profession?
I am a consultant.
In what area do you focus in?
I work in convention, sports, and entertainment facilities. I do market and feasibility research for mostly public sector entities.
And have you ever held a position with the village?
I have.
And that was?
I was chair of the EDC for at its initiation.
Someone who knows what they're talking about. Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Thank you very much. Margie?
Ouch. Margie Secunder, 500 Block River Oaks Drive. First, I wanted to thank Clerk Keller, because I did not speak last time. I postponed. I wanted to thank you for supporting citizen-led initiatives like the term limits referendum question and for certifying it for the April 1st ballot, despite pressure against doing so. Thank you. I also wanted to announce very quickly, I just learned 4 hours ago, President Trump cut his government ethics officer director. So I wanted you all to know that. I also am going to piece together a couple of things because President Ducey named me last time as the filer of the complaint that the Ethics Committee then reviewed January 31st. The Ethics Committee has a confidentiality provision in it. However, in reviewing since then, I discovered that January of 2022, then village attorney carved out and limited authority by the Ethics Commission, restricting them to only look at two provisions, prohibited political activities and gift ban. Everything else was removed. Prior ordinance that was in place, commission had met for 20 years. Prior ordinance was existing and did not have carve-outs, did not restrict the authority of the commission for the ethics ordinance. I recognize that the village has final say. I recognize that Jessica Spencer in her packet with a February 10th update states that cites a section that has in the ethics code that has to do with enforcement. I never cited such a thing. Of course, enforcement is yours, but if you exercise enforcement without resolving the underlying issues, I think residents and the community has a problem. I too would like to everyone to get along, a tiny little community. I love this space where you seem to all do. 11,000 people in a 1.5 square mile area. But I'm diverting from my talk. Regarding considering JLL for a broker contract, and Mr. Hasinski, you may not know all the information. For a broker contract for broker services to market and sell select village-owned properties. Commissioner Walfeld's resignation, it still stands, I'm sorry. My complaint still stands, not regarding the conflict of interest of Commissioner Walfeld, but regarding the conflict of interest of the EDC. Removing Walfeld's resignation from the EDC does not eliminate the EDC's conflict of interest, nor the appearance of such in the broker selection process. A vote to award the contract tonight would disregard the Ethics Commission's January 31st request to delay voting on the broker contract pending a final ethics decision and to extend the EC's authority to cover conflicts of interest. Approval of the JLL contract may actually extend the ethics violations to the Village Board. The chosen broker is to identify the Madison Street developer and negotiate on behalf of the village and sale terms and a price below market per Mr. Walsh, January 27th meeting audio. The EDC allowed Walter Walfeld, by his frequent attendance and participation, and to gain an inside knowledge of the EDC's criteria, preferences, and constraints for broker services well beyond competitors' knowledge. The result was JLL's RFP exceeded other prospective brokers' RFPs, as Chairman Brown noted. Chairman Brown noted JLL gets what we're doing here. The EDC's broker selection process was unfair to all other prospective brokers and to potential candidates, such as JLL's competitors, who declined to submit RFPs while Mr. Walfeld was seated on the EDC. The EDC received Walfeld's input on designing the RFP, identifying the goals and goals, advocating. I list a number of things in my two complaints, how the fee structure could be proposed, giving an example of team working with Elmhurst zoning restrictions, endorsing a partnership with the Village of River Forest, saying it works really well, et cetera. Why didn't Walfeld resign the moment JLL decided to submit an RFP to avoid a conflict of interest or the appearance of such? Why did the EDC accept JLL's proposal? What benefit remained? Chairman Brown stated the benefit was greater than the risk of a conflict of interest. The selection of JLL was predetermined in advance of the EDC's and staff's evaluations.
Margie, you're already over 5 minutes, so if you can wrap it up, I appreciate it.
Thank you. I have a lot more to say.
Now, we did get that letter, so we are.
I know you did.
Okay.
So what I would like to say is regarding the ethics complaint, April 25th of 2022, the board voted to carve out and restrict the ethics commission to the, only those two sections. instead of what was in place prior, Greg Smith, prior village attorney, actually proposed it in writing in the January 20th, 2022 EC minutes. You're welcome to check those. And I would ask that you look into that, that you delay the vote. I know you're in a hurry. Lake and Lathrop is probably going to be released from the court soon. There's some rush here, even though there wasn't during neighborhood dialogues. So I ask that you not consider the JLL contract and not issue that today. And I also ask that the EC should not have gone into executive session because it had no authority over those sections that were cited. Thank you.
Patty?
Patty Hennick, 700 Bonnie Bray. Some of my comments are going to be a little bit of a repeat, but actually expanding on the previous speakers. After reading the February 10th update provided in tonight's board packet regarding the JLL contract and the ethics complaint filed, it's clear there is a desire to dismiss the full recommendations made by the ethics commissions at their January 31st meeting. I have transcribed the following from the meeting since I think it's important to be more public. Chairperson Daly stated, and I quote, "While in executive session, we were made aware of a particular section in the ethics code, which was not part of the original code that I was involved in drafting, but it passed, and there is a limitation to our authority," end quote. She goes on to explain that there are two sections of the code that are under the commission's purview, sections 1-23-3, which, as mentioned, addresses the prohibited political activities, and section 123-4, which addresses a gift ban. She further shares that the complaint before them, however, falls under section 1-23-5, which is the ethical standards. Again, I'm going to be quoting. "The way this ordinance has been now drafted is that it takes away from the Ethics Commission the duty and obligation, and quite frankly, the honor of reviewing complaints relating to violations of the ethical standards that are set forth therein. So as far as where we are, we do not have the authority to review this complaint." As an aside, Commissioner Ignafo at this point adds, "not yet at this moment." Commissioner Daly continues with, "This is a big concern for us because the guts of this ordinance are the ethical standards, and that has been carved out of our authority." The commission then discussed what their course of action should be, which was to approve the following motions. Motion 1, to enter and continue the complaint now before us until a later time as it could be readdressed by this committee. Motion carried unanimously. Clearly, the commission felt that there was merit in the ethics complaint filed and wanted the ability to pursue it further. Motion 2. The Village Ethical Ordinance Chapter 1-23-8B1 to be submitted to the Village Board with the amendment to read as follows. Quote, to consider complaints of alleged violations of duties imposed in sections 1-23-3, 1-23-4, and 1-23-5 of this chapter. Motion carried unanimously. Motion 3. Formally request that the Village Board abstain from executing the contract at the heart of the complaint brought presently before this board until such time that the Village Board addresses the recommendation made in the immediately prior motion, specifically inclusion of the actual ethical standards into the purview of this committee. Again, the motion carried unanimously. Chairman Daly ends the meeting with, and I quote, "I certainly hope that the board will listen to us, because I think that these statements that were made in front of this board during the public commentary session raise significant issues that should be considered by this board and we are currently not able to do so based on the carved out of our authority under this ethics code. When the ethics code was updated in 2022, there was a letter in the Wednesday Journal by Chairperson Daly. She quoted in there that President Ducey said, "Let's draft a new code that is best in class." The title of the letter was, "River Forest is a Model of Good Governance." At your January 13th meeting, you heard feedback from resident dialogues that there is a consistent lack of trust with residents when it comes to development decisions. Voting tonight on a contract with JLL is not a model of good governance. More importantly, it further erodes trust with residents if you don't seriously take all three recommendations from the Ethics Commission prior to approving a contract. Anything short of that signals a lack of genuine interest in following a strong, best-in-class ethics code. And I would concur with you when there's disingenuousness and criticism of folks on our commission and not following folks on our commission's recommendations. That would include the Ethics Commission. And so to not follow their recommendation would also perhaps discourage further engagement of residents. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Beth?
Hey, Beth Chang, 30 Franklin Avenue. I'm coming at this maybe from like a slightly different angle. So first, I want to thank the village and the board and Matt for organizing the neighborhood dialogues. You know, I think we had a lot of good conversations, and Rick Jaskolka wrote an excellent report. And I guess what I want to ask the board to do is to now act based on what came out of those dialogues. And there's really two things. One is about substance and the other is about process. So on the substance of it, I would like to request that the board make sure to provide Rick Jaskolka's excellent report to any real estate broker that is selected, and that they be directed to take into account everything that came out of all the time that residents and Matt and Rick spent. That's extremely important, because otherwise it was a waste of everybody's time. And I want to note that in the, I don't know, it's maybe page 113 of the packet, but there's a page on in JLL's proposal on marketing the zoning and comprehensive plan, where it says, allowing density, JLL assumes a future development will be able to negotiate more density through compliance with River Forest's affordable housing plan and comprehensive plan. Moreover, we assume that a project approved through the PD process will not be constrained by the current minimum lot area requirement. And I feel like this pre-assumption about density goes completely against what we talked about in the neighborhood dialogues, and that anybody who is selected should be directed based on the updated information and not just the comprehensive plan from 2019. This is very important, because otherwise, like I said, the whole process was moot. So whether you approve JLL tonight or choose a different broker, I just really want to make a very strong request for that. Second, on process, the other big thing that came out of Rick's report was we need not just communication, but engagement. And the whole thing about this ethics kind of brouhaha, which honestly I have to say, I'm not even really sure what to think. And the reason I'm not sure what to think is, despite my being a fairly engaged person with the process, for some reason, I guess I was asleep at the switch, but I didn't know that this was going on. I didn't know that a broker was being considered until, like, I heard Matt's presentation in January that said, what we're going to do is we're going to hire a broker. I thought, oh, that sounds like a good idea. That, well, it turns out this proposal was done last year. And, you know, I want to keep my remarks short, but I feel like if you want people to be engaged, and if you want to avoid these kinds of last minute issues where people feel all riled up, is just highlight the things that might be controversial, right? Last year, we were in the middle of the whole discussion about the zoning changes. And the fact that the EDC was considering this was flying totally under the radar. You know, you guys do a great job of putting out the board meetings and stuff. But honestly, I don't have time to go and check all the time to see if some of the commissions that meet infrequently, like, are going to be meeting. You could put in the village newsletter the EDC is considering real estate broker thing. At the neighborhood dialogues, I know Matt said it came up at some of them, but for some reason it didn't come up at mine, even though we asked, like, what's the village hearing from developers? How can we hear more from developers? And it would have been a very natural time to sort of say, well, actually, we have been considering a developer, because otherwise we're just once again kind of caught flat-footed, and it seems like something as fishy is going on, even though maybe nothing fishy is going on, right? But it just, it's part of like a pattern of this feeling that some of us residents have of somehow things are trying to be pushed through without people noticing. So just hit us between the eyes with it, because we're all busy. Put in the newsletters your conclusions and your intentions, not just we had some neighborhood dialogues. Click on the link for more information, because a lot of people just don't have time to do that, right? You say in there, we're going to hire a real estate broker. We're in the process of investigating a real estate broker. We are, you know, whatever. I think there was mention of in the next 90 days, you would be doing something with developer forums. But again, I don't know what's happening with that. And I don't want to wake up one day to find out there's a meeting like 2 days from now. So that's kind of, you know, I don't know what to say about the actual ethics issue. I would say from what I've heard tonight, if the commission is asking to be able to look at it and they have a weird constraint on their purview, I think you should let them look at it. But so that's it. Thanks. Okay.
Thanks, Beth. All right. That concludes the public testimony. So why don't I just start and talk about the Ethics Commission, because and then I'll, you know, certainly let all the trustees talk. But, you know, we didn't touch the Ethics Commission ordinance till at least 2010, maybe even further back. Long time. And in 2010, if you go back to that ordinance, it has the conflict of interest is the authority of the village board. So when you hear that something was carved out, it was never carved out. It was always in our ordinance. Now, saying that, I realize that some of the members of the commission was a bit surprised, and that's unfortunate. And since then, I have talked to those commissioners, and they do believe and understood that it was their fault that they didn't read it. And therefore, you know, they don't blame anybody. They just didn't read it. But there were four iterations starting from August 24th to 2021. The second iteration, November 4th, where the language was in the ethics ordinance and reviewed by the Ethics Commission. It was again reviewed on the third time by January 20th, and then again on February 17th. So, and then eventually they voted March 9th for the ethics ordinance, which had the language in there where the any of the conflicts of interest would be retained by the authority of the village board. But they strengthened the code quite a bit. They included what political activity is, what gift bans are. It was very vague in the prior ordinance. And more importantly, they strengthened the language of covered individuals. It was very vague in the last ordinance back in the very beginning what covered individuals were and family members. We have a lot of people that don't realize that if you sit on this village board, that your family members are also a covered individual. Some people didn't realize that. And that's why we had to strengthen the commission, the code, because it really needed to understand that not only us as covered members, but our family members are also covered individuals. So the code is pretty good and very, very strong. Anyway, after the vote by the commission, the very same ordinance that they voted on came before you guys, before us, and it never changed. Nothing changed, and we voted 6-0. And I know I read it in detail, and I trust all my colleagues read it in detail and understood it. And so I believe everybody realizes, both I believe here and perhaps even at the commission, that having the conflict of interest portion be retained at the village board is not unusual. In fact, our limited amount of work that we've done, and we'll do more, basically
shows that most municipalities' conflict of interest sits with the village board. In fact, Oak Park Village, they don't have an ethics commission. Their ethics commission is their village board. And so I think, again, we have to be careful that we don't throw a lot of stuff around. I think I trust my colleagues around the table here that we read our documents, we read our ordinance, we understood it. And in fact, it is best in class. So with that, I mean, I heard what the village, what the commission wanted. Of course, that was prior to the Commissioner Wahlfeld resigning from the commission, which is unfortunate. And when speaking with the commission, I said to Chair Daly that if you want to consider looking at conflicts of interest in your code, in the code, I mean, go ahead and convene your committee and go ahead and discuss that. I'm not sure the village board wants to release that authority to the commission, but that's a conversation, you know, we'll have at a later date with the board. But go ahead and convene it and, you know, come to the village board with your amendment. But that doesn't mean that we should just wait. The code clearly says it's our authority and our responsibility. And I take that very serious. And I have done my job over the last 2 weeks. And by the way, we did defer it because the Ethics Commission did ask. And so in deference to the commission, they needed to read the complaint and make sure that there's nothing in there that other than the conflict of interest that they could or should have addressed. So it was in our best interest to defer it so they could take it and look at it in its entirety. So with that, it's now back in our lap, which isn't a bad thing. That's what the code says, always said. And this is what we agreed to back in 2022 when we all agreed to it. So anyway, I just wanted to have some clarity over the ordinance and where that is at. Again, from my point of view, I take my job very serious. I do my work. In the last 2 weeks, I've had lots of conversations with different commissioners, both the EDC commission as well as the Ethics Commission. And I truly believe that, and then I've read village attorney Molina's memo to us, which he gave a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago. Village administration, Matt Walsh, who gave our presentation, and then he gave us another email that indicated his you know, what he believes the process was and believes in his support to this process. So I don't know much more we can investigate. I feel very comfortable in who I've talked to, what I've read, and what I understand it to be. And I'm certainly ready to vote. So those are my points of view. I will certainly fill in the blanks if any of the trustees want that.
Either Matt or Attorney Molina, what's the status of the ethics complaint now that Mr. Wahlfeld is no longer engaged with us?
Well, the status of the ethics complaint, I mean, it's still there for this board to consider, but it was addressed by our memo to the village board, and it was addressed in the memo we did to the EDC, which pointed out that although the complaint was filed with them, they don't have authority over this. None of the allegations in it dealt with the parts of the code or conflicts that they were to deal with. And so you have that. All the allegations focus on the involvement of EDC Commissioner Wahlfeld. There are all sorts of allegations about how he may have helped now that are in addition created the RFP. I mean, there's no legal conflict of interest there. The different boards may decide they want people who have never had anything to do with the village to draft RFPs. That's really not typically the way it works, though. Most of the people that apply for work as consultants with villages have a history, and most staff like that history because they have some experience with people they've worked with before. That's just the way the world tends to work, but it's not a legal conflict of interest. You could create a scenario where you want it more pure, I guess, but it's not any legal requirement. So in my opinion, the contract is before you. The complaint and public comment is before you. and you have authority over both of those things. So, and if you want my opinion on as to whether there is a legal conflict of interest here, that when I say that, it means that to adopt this contract, it could be invalidated by a court because of what happened here. My opinion is no, there is no such conflict of interest. You need to decide how you like the process and take that all into account. Your policymakers, that's your decision.
So, you know, Matt, if you could tell us, just define for us what a broker can and cannot do. If that's too much, are you able to do that?
Yes.
Under this contract.
Sure. I'll take a shot at that. So the scope of work that will be assigned to JLL in this case, they'll be the primary contact for marketing the village-owned properties on Madison Street, the LCFS property, and the two former residential properties just north of the alley. So instead of the current position where staff addresses inquiries for development, the broker would be the primary contact for development, and will also seek out developers and interested parties by sharing marketing materials about what the village would like to see at that property, and will then set a window for marketing and collecting those kind of preliminary offers, and then work with the village to narrow down offers, make sure that it's something that's in line with what the village board wants to see, in line with the comprehensive plan and the community comments from that we've received for the past year or two as we've discussed this. And then will assist us with negotiating ultimately the contract to the transaction that will be place a redevelopment agreement to redevelop the property.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, so I have a question about the contract, but before we do that, it seems as if we should be evaluating whether or not we're going to consider this ethics situation before we even enter into a discussion about whether or not we accept the contract.
It's all part of the same thing, John.
Yeah. Well, so, one's got to come before the other.
Well, I think if we approve it, then talking about the, you know, that there is no conflict of interest. But, I mean, we'll talk through it. And that's what we're doing tonight.
Okay.
So far, I've been hearing questions relating to the conflicts. So we're not even to the actual contract.
We're not
yet.
Even there yet. But
So I'm okay so far.
Yeah.
But John, did you have something else to add? Okay.
When we get to the contract.
All right. Okay.
We'll get there.
Okay. Because I have a couple questions too. And I've heard a couple. Well, number one, thank you for the clarification on, because I saw the same thing on the misunderstanding of the board redacting, changing the ordinance. We received it the way it came from the commission, and I understand the ordinance originally always let and kept the power of the contract review of the conflict of interest with the board. So that never stayed. I did hear the commissioners at the meeting that somehow it was changed, but it wasn't changed. And then they had the versions at least from three times to review it. And so they had the opportunity to change it or make a recommendation at that time. I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying they had the opportunity to do that. So when it came to us, I'm just responding to the fact that the allegation came that the board somehow changed what they approved or gave to us. And that was not the case as it comes to the conflict of interest. So I just want that to be clear, because people are thinking that we did change it and we did not. The other thing about the fairness, and I do understand, and I'm looking at it too as a legal conflict of interest, not a perceived conflict of interest. And correct me if I'm wrong, I do recall that Walt did disclose that he was from JLL. He actually also did not vote and take any initial votes regarding JLL initially.
That is my understanding. That's,
so just
to be clear, when you say there was no conflict of interest, in the end, there was no conflict of interest, because the initial conflict of interest was perceived and dealt with appropriately. And by that, when JLL came in as a respondent, the administration realized the connection, the fact that Mr. Wahlfeld was an employee and cordoned him off from the interview process at that point. And then when it came time for the consideration by the full EDC, he announced his relationship with JLL, which is exactly the appropriate thing to do, and removed himself from the dais and recused himself from the actual vote, which was a recommendation. So the only time when that does not solve a conflict of interest is when there's a true financial interest in a contract. And that was the primary thing that their memo to the board dealt with, because it seemed that at the EDC meeting, those kinds of accusations were being made. And it is correct that a real financial interest in a contract cannot be solved by recusal. However, the EDC, the members of the EDC, in our opinion, are not municipal officers within the meaning of those statutes. They're two state statutes. They're felonies. And also, they fall within an exception because JLL is a publicly traded company and Mr. Wahlfeld is an employee with less than a 1% ownership interest in this large company. And so he was not, he had no financial interest in this contract as defined by state statute. And then, so then, under the common law of conflicts and under the law of the code of the Village of River Forest, this conflict was perceived at the appropriate time and dealt with in the normal way that these kinds of conflicts are dealt with.
Okay. Then my next step was, and I recall also Matt Walsh reviewing this, mm-hmm. and presenting this at the last meeting, that when it did come to the actual review of the proposals, Walt was not involved in that. And you said there were two rounds of reviews. The first one was with Katie Lowles and Tim Brangle, and our Jessica Spencer was part of that as well. Round two was with Chairman Carler Brown, Brangle, and again, Jessica Spencer and Matt Walsh. So there was Matt Walsh, very clear, not Walt, for the record. And so Walt was not even part of that. So he had no participation in that. So,
correct.
And it was these review teams that ended up making the recommendations. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Okay. So for me, I don't see where the legal conflict of interest exists. I'm comfortable moving ahead with this contract. If that's what the board desires, that's my viewpoint. That's what I'm considering.
I'd like to take an opportunity to address a letter that we received at 3 o'clock this afternoon from Mrs. Sikander. In that letter, Mrs. Sikander quotes Matt Walsh as saying that quote, the chosen broker will identify the Madison Street developer and negotiate on behalf of the village the sale terms at a price below market. As a real estate professional and as someone who does development, there's nothing wrong with that, because what this board is going to look at is they're going to look at the total package. The purchase price of the land may be less, but there may be additional taxes. There may be other incentives that the developer is going to give or get on behalf of this development. So selling something for below market is not always a problem. There's another comment in there about working for the common good. Again, as Mr. Hosinski said, let's remember, all of us up here and the people who are on our commissions, we do this for free. Okay. We do this because we love the place where we live and we want to continue to make this place better. And then the assertion from Mrs. Sikander that a seasoned professional with years of commercial real estate experience would provide inside knowledge to his company in order to obtain this assignment is not only wrong, but demeans the professional reputation of one of our neighbors. JLL is a multi-million dollar company that has thousands of employees around the world. Do you truly believe that someone's going to collude with fellow neighbors over an acre of parcel of land in a small western suburb of Chicago to the detriment of their reputation? Our EDC is comprised of folks, financial folks, engineers, land planners, marketing professionals who prepare RFPs for a living. Who's better to prepare an RFP and qualify candidates? I could go on, but there are too many statements in this letter that are just not facts. In fact, the village did not propose a zoning change last year. It proposed a zoning amendment, two separate and distinct actions. We've got to stop these little speed bumps to slow our progress in our community. As it relates to the ethics ordinance and committee, I voted in favor of this ordinance. I believe that the conflict of interest should stay with the village board as the ethics ordinance is written and was successfully passed by a 6-0 margin. After a brief review, there are many communities whose village boards retain this authority. Our village attorney has provided an opinion of this matter. In that opinion, I'm ready to move forward with this assignment for JLL.
Yeah, I have some comments. In relation to the ethics complaint, the ethics committee has a rubric or a way that they go about determining whether they even like decide if they're going to handle a complaint or not. And this was something that Matt and I spoke about. And so the fact that they picked this up and wanted to even discuss it and make a finding on it and determination to me means that it is important enough. And I want to hear them as experts, people who are part of the Ethics Commission on this one in particular. I do think that given the chair's surprise, and it sounds like the other members of the commission's surprise that they did not have this authority, given our, like, I'm sure we were surprised by that too, because
I knew. Were you anybody surprised?
Well, you deferred because of the ethics complaint.
No, because it was a commission. Yeah, I mean, the commission.
But you didn't realize at that point.
No, I completely realized it. I think it was important for the commission to look at the full complaint, and they asked for it.
So
I
guess I'm confused because you deferred the question, but it was under something that was in relation to what we all perceived was their purview. And so we did not, nobody realized that it was not under their purview, or else they wouldn't have taken up the question, right?
So let me address this, because it's largely my fault or my doing that this procedure happened. So when the complaint came in, it was filed, if you will, it was written to the Ethics Commission, like a complaint is filed in a court of law. Now, anybody can do that, okay? But some courts have limited jurisdiction or limited power over certain matters. And so since this was filed with the Ethics Commission, I believe the appropriate thing was for the Ethics Commission to consider the complaint and its role in relation to it.
Right.
However, we knew when it came in, and President Iduci knew it as well, that the jurisdiction in this case, because of how the complaint appeared to be drafted, referring only to conflicts of interest, did not fall within one of those items that they had the authority to hear. So I thought the appropriate thing was for them to have a meeting and hear and look at this complaint, but it's for them to determine. It's right. A court's power to determine its own jurisdiction. And so we simply made the commission aware of the fact that this complaint appears to be only one involving conflicts of interest and not one within their authority. And the appropriate thing would be to dismiss it and defer to the village board that has the authority to address it when the contract was reconsidered on February 10th. Now, they weren't happy with that because apparently they were surprised, but that's why it went that way.
But and I just want to add one more thing.
Right.
Matt, it was my understanding that Chair Daly asked you to tell and notify the board to defer it, so they wanted to take.
That's correct.
That is correct.
So that's.
I mean, that's.
And Chairman Daly received the
request. They requested that we defer it.
But Kathy also at our meeting said that she was going to defer it.
Yes.
Well, she agreed to defer.
I agreed it because Daly
asked. I just want
the
record to reflect what actually.
I didn't do it. I wouldn't have done it if they didn't request it. I did it because Chair Daly asked it, and I of course wanted to give them deference.
So to me, that doesn't make sense. If it wasn't in their purview, we would have never considered the complaint, and it would have just been as something else that we would have gotten as part of like public comment or more information from residents, right? The fact that there still is a complaint out there, we're talking about it right now, but we haven't even determined. We don't have a rubric, from my understanding, of determining an ethics complaint or violation for those things that are under our purview. The fact that wasn't a line item tonight, we had more information on the ethics complaint itself bothers me, because how are we supposed to determine that if we don't have the information? You know, what we have in the agenda tonight is to just approve or not approve the contract. There is nothing about the complaint itself. So the complaint is still outstanding. What I would want to see is, if it's under our purview and we want to keep it under our purview, that we make a decision on the complaint, that that is a line item in our agenda. I don't know if we go into executive session about or we do it publicly, but that that is something that we review. And then either, and we have a finding on it then. And I would rather have that in place. I think that would give residents some sense of we are going through the process appropriately to hear out this complaint. My understanding is that the Ethics Commission would still want to review this complaint and make a finding on it, that they are currently underway of setting up a meeting to go through changes that they are requesting in order to have this fall under their purview again of contracts, as they submitted in a draft. And that process and coming up with a determination on this would take less than maybe a month. And in my opinion, waiting on this contract and either having them come up with a finding or having us come up with a finding, waiting a month for me does not seem like a very long time for us to be able to clear the air of this issue.
Yeah. I think you've heard from your, I mean.
The only thing I want
to. Can I weigh in from afar?
Yeah, wait a minute. Wait, one minute.
I haven't had a chance to weigh in, so I want to make sure you know that I do want to weigh in.
I just want to clarify, because, you know, the statement that was just said, they want to, again, rehear, or I forgot what the actual regain or rehear or the jurisdiction of that. They never had it in the first place. So it's not regain it. They're wanting it to have. They want to have it for the first time. That's what I understand. So I just want to be very clear, because we're always going back like they had it and we're taking it away from them. That's not the case. They never had it. They're making the request. And I want the record to reflect that.
That's correct. And Katie, I will call on you. Yeah, it's absolutely true. They never had it. And they requested an opportunity to convene their committee. And of course, I support their convening their committee. And if they want to look to amend the ordinance, they can. But that doesn't mean this group is going to accept it. So that's another issue, completely separate issue from the ethics complaint that I believe is before us. So Katie, I'm going to let you go ahead and talk.
Thanks. It feels to me that it's early days in the Madison Street project. We're just talking about getting a broker to help us select the right development to put in that place. It's early. I know we all want to move forward with it, but we've waited for the neighborhood dialogues. And I don't see any reason why we shouldn't wait to do this right and to try to avoid having the taint of not doing it right and having a conflict of interest in the selection of the very early selection of the broker. So I'm in favor of pausing, taking a breath, and getting the expertise from the Ethics Commission that is full of experts on ethics on this issue. And if I think, as I understand, the plan is to have them review it and have a chance to have this authority that they did think they had, and then give us, the board, the benefit of their input. And it very well may be that there's no conflict. And then we can have that opinion and we can move on, select the broker, have the broker help us select the developer. In terms of the Ethics Commission having this authority to begin with or not, something's just not adding up for me on the facts of what I'm hearing from different people about what we knew and what we didn't know. Matt, you and I had a discussion. You called me on February 6th to give me an update on what happened at the Ethics Commission and, you know, where things stood. And you specifically told me that while you were preparing for the Ethics Commission meeting, it was discovered that the Ethics Commission scope didn't include the section of the ethics code that speaks to the conflict of interest. So I'm just boggled at what, you know, what is right and what isn't right here. I'm boggled to hear that now, you know, Kathy, you're saying, oh, well, when you tabled this at our last meeting, you knew when you tabled it that the Ethics Commission didn't have the purview. Why wasn't that said at our last meeting? These things just aren't adding up for me. And, wow. And putting that aside, let me just finish, please. Putting aside how these things do or don't add up, why wouldn't we just sit for a minute, take a breath, acknowledge the Ethics Commission has experts on it on this topic, have them look at it and get the benefit of their input?
Okay, let me just address, I don't know where you're confused and why you're confused. I apologize for that, but I wasn't confused. And in fact, if I understand it, you all voted on this back in April 25th, 2022. So you shouldn't have been confused. But that, we all forget things. I know some regret their vote. We hear that constantly sometimes. But I don't think you guys regretted your vote. I think you understood your vote. And I hope you read the ordinance and you understood the ordinance just like I did. Matt maybe didn't understand it because he wasn't the village administrator at the time, I don't believe. But so I don't know where the confusion is. It's not important. What's important right now is where we're at. And we have to address the current village ordinance that we voted on says we have the authority. So I recommend that we make that decision tonight so we can move forward with the JLL contract, if that's what the board would like to do. So I'll leave it as that.
So in essence, what the Ethics Committee is asking, Commission is asking for, is they're asking for a right that is the village board's, which no other commission has. All of our commissions are advisory.
No, right? No, not necessarily, Bob. What they're looking for is the right to give an opinion on that piece of a complaint.
Okay.
They still would reside our authority. It's still our authority, because they only are advisory. I think I'm correct on that, right, Lance? They're only advisory.
Correct.
So they just want the ability to take a complaint that is a conflict of interest and review it and give us their advice and counsel. So again, I'm not saying that we wouldn't want them to consider that and bring it back to the village board. I told that to Chair Daly, go ahead and convene your group. But that's a separate issue than what we have tonight. Tonight's issue is we retain that, according to our current ordinance, we retain that authority and we should do our job.
And we have a legal opinion from our attorney.
Well, we have a legal opinion. We have a written village administration report. We had 2 weeks ago, we had a village, a presentation on the process. I think we have everything before us. I did my job. I looked into this. I realized that, you know, this is our job and did the work. So just to know, so I'm not suggesting that when they go to the, you know, when they could come back to us and we could deny and keep the authority. I mean, that's certainly in our purview. And that's something I would recommend we keep, because based on a lot of work that we've done looking at other municipalities, the authority stays with the village board. So, but we can discuss that when we get to it. But that's a way separate issue.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, I do truly believe it's important to give our commission some degree of deference. On this matter, you know, my personal opinion is that the selection was selected in an unbiased way. He was not in the room when the selection was made. So unless you're saying there was some type of bias he infiltrated with the way that the proposal was structured, you know, that to me is somewhat of a reach. But then I would also say that there are controls along the way that we as the board could insert to fully support fairness in the process. Meaning, if there is a contract presented to us, we can do a secondary check on it. There's many things we can do,
right,
to continually assure that there's no possibility of unfairness to this process. And that's why I asked about the duties of the broker. It's not unfettered ability to basically push a contract through. I don't believe that's the case. I believe that, you know, knowing that there could even possibly be an issue, we will take a deep look into it to ensure that nothing is unfair about the process. And then with regard to the ethics committee, I believe we should not rush and change things without a full, we should look into the history of it, and we need to ensure that the process does work or does not work for us, but we can't just keep quickly changing things at the last minute because we just discovered it. I don't think that's a way to rule, in my opinion.
I do think that it's not necessarily rushing. It's just upping the timetable, right? So if they want to request that we have, and they made that request and they voted on it, right? Unanimously. If they want to request a change to the ordinance, they can do that. They can have a meeting, you know, have that meeting quickly, and then it comes back to us at our next meeting as something to review with the appropriate background and information for us to vote on. What you're talking about when you say that we've got levers and ways as a board to look at the conflict of interest and make sure that's not there. This complaint is still out there. We have not done anything with the complaint. The complaint should have been a completely different line item for us to discuss and review. And again, have background information, maybe have had the minutes or listened to the EDC or meeting, but have the minutes in there. Maybe have the opinion of our legal folks in there so that people could see the work that we were doing, because the public has not had a chance to see the work, as Kathy is mentioning, right? So what we're doing is we're not making a decision on that. We're not voting on that. The complaint is still out there.
So can I ask a question along those same lines? If after receiving some information from the ethics committee, we deny that vote or that change.
The amendment.
Mm-hmm. Where are we?
Yeah. Right. We're back here. So that's why I'm saying, I think they're two very separate issues, like you're saying, Ken, that the Ethics Commission wants a lot and we may want to give them a lot, but that's a very separate issue to what our duties are today. And right.
Our duty is to look at this complaint, make a determination.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do.
But we have, like, we don't have any of the information.
But we do.
The
public doesn't have.
Yes, they do, because we talked about it at the last meeting. Let me finish.
Hang on, guys. Come on.
Matt, in detail, explained the process. He explained everything that went on, whether you listened to the minutes or not. Matt, as our village administrator, explained exactly what happened. They had separate meetings with Brangle, Katie Lowe, Jessica, and Matt. Okay. He explained what they did and what they went through. Matt did not open an envelope from a brokerage company and just pick JLL out. There was no limitations on who could apply for that. And so everything we got, we looked at. And Matt explained that. So I don't understand what other information you want.
He explained that, and it was just a presentation on what the process was, right? We weren't considering the complaint at that time. So why would we be asking questions of conflict of interest at that point?
Okay. Do you recall early on when I was on this board that every time we voted on $60 for a McDonald's franchisee that I recused myself? Do you recall when Rez was early on the board and he worked for a law firm, anything that had to do with education, he recused himself? So why are we bringing this up now? We've been doing this forever. People who have some connection recuse themselves. Okay. Is there anything that we do in this world or in this village where some of us may not have a financial interest because of a brokerage account or any of these other things? We had actual issues that we recused ourselves from. And so, so Wally recused himself.
I guess what I'm saying, Bob, is that we have an ethics complaint that's out there. Right now, we're talking about it, but we didn't have any prep for the ethics complaint itself. Right now, we're supposed to be talking about a contract and voting on that contract itself. We should be, as a board, making a determination on whether to take up the ethics complaint. We don't have a rubric on whether or on how to do that.
Okay. We had one against Wally Walfell, and now we have one against the EDC board. What are we dealing with now?
Okay. No, the first one was
Okay, come on. Bob, we have one ethics complaint, and it's regarding the EDC, Wally, the commissioner, vis-a-vis JLM.
Go ahead. We actually have two ethics complaints. Wasn't there a second one that came up today?
I think it's just one.
Correct.
Okay. Wait, are there one or two?
Katie, we're going to get that answer.
There are physically two complaints. They do center for their inspiration on the fact that Wally Walfelt was a member of the EDC and the RFP was prepared when he was a member of the EDC, and that he was on the EDC when the recommendation was made. The conflict of interest allegations against the EDC arise from the fact that they went ahead and you know, submitted, published the RFP with Mr. Walfelt's involvement, and then did the interviews and claiming that, you know, however he was treated wasn't sufficient. So the whole EDC was guilty of a conflict of interest. But now there's no basis in my opinion that this is a policy question with how municipalities do RFPs. I mean, just like someone can say, well, I don't want my police chief to live in town. I think they shouldn't live in town because I think it's a conflict of interest when the police chief lives in town. Well, you can have that opinion, but it's not a legal conflict of interest. Someone can say that. They can say that police chief has children in town and it'll be perceived as anything that happens will be unfair and biased. And that's not, you know, that's not invalid, but it has no legal basis in conflict of interest law. And so all the facts in these two complaints grow out of Mr. Walfelt's membership in the EDC and this whole RFP. And even if the board were to change the ordinance now, I mean, this is really an accusation of wrongdoing by Mr. Walfelt. It really is. And if the board were to change the ordinance, now are they going to consider his actions with a law that came later when it was based on his actions months ago? I don't know that would be proper. I don't, you know, it could affect his own reputation.
With all due respect, I don't think I'm not reading from any of the complaints that anyone's accusing that EDC member or former EDC member of any wrongdoing. Often, you know, we can do our best, but there can still be, you know, a problem. And I think that might have been what happened here. I don't know. But I don't get that anyone is accusing him. You know, there can
read the
be
letter.
Unintended consequence. Excuse me. There can be unintended consequences, you know, with, you know, an act of goodwill. So that seems a little harsh to be saying that, you know, this member is being accused. I think that we can, you know, we can make mistakes, you know, and it's just a mistake.
Read the letter, Katie. Read the letter. Okay, where in there it said Mr. Walfelt provided information to his company to get this assignment. Read the letter that you received this afternoon.
In the second complaint?
In the letter that you received this afternoon at 3:00.
It was emailed to the board.
It was emailed to the board.
Okay. So are there two complaints or one?
I think they're involved the same. I would treat it, talk
there,
about
there in are two documents.
Yeah, there are two documents. To me, it involves the same. Yeah, I Lance, you pointed out something that very important, that whatever allegedly Walt shared as part of the RFP, you're saying that it was released to the public so all of them saw it, whatever was in that RFP was released to the public.
Whatever his involvement was public.
Okay, it was public. And the reason I'm highlighting that is because when I looked at this, I didn't look at if it was Walt, if it was the EDC. I looked at the overall process. And I looked to see, was there anything that was unfair that gave someone an unfair advantage that was of evidence as part of this process? And I have not seen that. I've looked at our board packet the last time. This time I did go back. I listened to the Ethics Commission audio. I listened to the EDC audios, and I understand exactly what we're all talking about. But again, for me, this is not a legal conflict of interest. I'm already looking at that. I'm already finding from my perception or my opinion, I don't see any conflict of interest based on our ordinance on that. It's still within our purview. Mm-hmm. We have the power. We've had the power. So if some other entity, the Ethics Commission, wants it, they can ask for it. But they don't. I just wanted to make it clear that that purview is still with us. So, and I heard, why didn't we prepare for the complaint that was received today? I still see it. It relates to similarly to the previous one that was submitted from the last week. Okay. And I can't say why. No, wait, I'm not done yet. Okay. I can't say we can't address it, and why it's not a line item in this agenda is because, remember, that came to us 3 o'clock today. The agenda went out on Friday. There's no way we could have put it in part of the agenda, but it's okay, because I'm saying I'm still responding to it based on the previous complaint. I see them both similar. So that's what I'm saying.
You're misunderstanding what I'm saying.
No, no. Well, I'm not done yet.
Because I'm not talking about a complaint that came in at 3 o'clock today. I'm talking about the first complaint.
Well, then we're all related. And I'm saying I'm ready to make a decision that there's no conflict. I'm not sure what everyone here is, if they're ready to make that decision. I do agree with Mr. Keller. We ought to be addressing the conflict. Is there a conflict or not? And then we just move ahead and talk about the contract if there isn't. So that's where I'm at. I'm at the point that I don't see a conflict. I'm ready to just talk about the contract.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. So I don't know where everybody
is. And it sounds like, Ken, what you said was correct. I mean, you know, even with going forward with the, it doesn't give him unfettered. There's still a lot of things that are.
Is it appropriate to add something to the agenda at this point?
No.
No. Okay.
Old man may want.
So you shouldn't say anything.
I was just going to say that I think Lance, in his opinion from 2 weeks ago, addressed the legal conflict at that time. And yeah, I do believe that Matt did a great job of explaining in the meeting. And then actually in the packet today, there's more information about what happened or what transpired. And I agree with Trustee Johnson that there's enough checks and balances here that will be fine on a going forward basis. And again, also agreeing with what you said with regard to the fact that, again, it became up. What if again, so we leveraged the knowledge of our commission. They developed a proposal, an RFP that went out to everybody, and anybody could have responded to that RFP.
And they did.
And they
had five responses.
Thank you.
Lisa, you're talking about us leveraging information that was in our packet today to consider a conflict of interest, but that wasn't even the question here today. The question was, are we going to approve this or not? So when you talk about the legal opinion, or the public has not seen that legal opinion, that should be a part of the documents. It should be a line item for us to consider and determine. We never made a judgment as a board with the information that Matt provided us on whether we should take on the complaint or not. So we need to do that first to clear the air before we handle this contract.
Well, I want to be very clear that our legal opinions from our attorneys do not get released to the public. I mean, it's one thing for him to say what his opinion is, a conclusion, and based on what he's advising us. I am not agreeing to release our written legal opinions to the public. That's something attorney-client privilege to us, and we would actually be derelict if we were to approve the release of our legal opinions.
Yeah, but often we've got information from Matt or part of the packet in one way or another, that information from our attorneys. And we've got quotes and from law and letting us understand how to go about looking at an issue.
I don't think I've ever seen legal documents.
I don't recall seeing any of those.
In our last packet, we had that.
What was
the
that?
One before last time we
was
had
it part
that?
Of our executive session?
No.
I don't know. I mean,
I have to see it, what you're talking about.
I don't recall if there is. It's very rare.
But it's one thing to say our village attorney advises us not to do this or that. That's fine. But to actually release our legal opinions, no.
Yeah, so I think by approving this and discussing the ethical complaint, I don't see why it's an issue with what we're doing. I mean, but we're discussing the ethic complaint. It sounds like the trustees, you've all considered it. I mean, certainly, I mean, Erica, you've even considered it, even though you're saying, hey, we still have to discuss it more. But I think from my vantage point, I think we've done a lot. I've done a lot of work in the last 2 weeks. I've, read all the documents, both client confidential documents. And of course, we heard Matt, as we've all said. So we don't want to drag all of this through the mud. These are volunteers, the EDC's volunteers, the Ethics Commission's volunteers. We're volunteers. We want to do what's right for River Force. And I think we are prepared to do what's right. I mean, I guess we all have different terminologies on what's right. But for me, I don't think there's any secrets here. There's nothing that anybody's hiding. There's no collusion. There's no financial gain. I think we're trying to create and manufacture, an issue, which I think we can solve right here, right before the public.
And the Ethics Commission thing, that's a whole nother story. I mean, it is.
A whole nother
story. Their purview on this is not going to change. It will take us, if we even want to consider it, it will take us months to make those kind of changes.
That's a different issue, Bob. And
I know it is. And that's what I'm saying. It's another issue. So we got to stop putting roadblocks up for every time we take a foot forward, we take two steps back.
I actually do have a question about the contract,
Okay. So any more questions regarding the ethics complaint? Ken, Bob, Erica, Katie?
I don't.
Okay.
Okay.
This presentation dates back to last April, and there was some significant changes in real estate law last August. So this contract, I assume, dates back to last April as well?
No.
Contract in the back of the packet?
No, this contract was reviewed by legal team within since January.
Okay. All right. I don't know commercial real estate, but it does put in here it's offering cooperative commission, and I don't believe that's allowed anymore. I don't know. I'm saying, is it allowed in commercial real estate to state cooperative commission in the contract?
I get a lot of.
I know you do. That's why I'm asking.
Bob, I don't think your mic's on because I can't hear you.
Oh.
But I want to hear you.
I'm sorry. So I get a lot of contracts where there's two brokers on there. There's the seller's broker and then there's the listing agent. So
no, but I'm talking about the listing agreement that's in our packet lists a cooperating broker's commission.
$250.
Oh, okay.
Points.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's 2.5 points. So the commission's 5. And so that's just splitting the commission, right?
No, they're saying it's additive, as I read it.
Additive?
Yeah.
So I found that to be odd.
Yeah.
So where is it at?
So it's on page 115. It's in section 1. The item is H. Mm-hmm. I'll read it if you want me to read it.
Thanks. We'll look into it.
No.
Yeah. So I was confused by that.
No, that's a good question.
115, page 8.
Yeah, so
page 115 in the pack.
We can take another. The approval, if it were to come, was subject to final attorney review. We're still doing final review. So I'm not familiar with the issue you're raising, John. So we'll run it to ground, mm-hmm. And if there's a problem,
I'm sorry. Okay. It just seemed odd.
I'm not
sure.
Being additive is out of the ordinary.
Does that seem odd?
Yes. Yeah, I can't. It could be split in the 5 or whatever. I can't speak to it right now. We'll have to.
Okay.
I don't know where it was originally or what changes were made.
That is certainly not the intent to have that be added.
But as you'll note from your packet, it is subject to final attorney review.
Right.
So we'll make sure it follows all current laws.
Just to clarify, it says, in the event there is an outside broker representing the buyer, JLL will cooperate with that broker under a separate agreement offering 275 basis points.
Of the gross purchase price.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's on page.
I think the separate agreement is what we don't want to do is we don't want to call out in our contract, correct me if I'm wrong, Lance, we don't want to have another broker in our contract. So they got to do that agreement on the side, and they typically do it up front so they know they're going to get paid later on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And as I say, I would want to confirm, you know, with real estate people in our firm that looked at this and know the laws better than I do. But this was looked at, but it is being subject to final attorney review by the board. So I just can't answer your question in detail,
okay,
John.
We don't.
Yeah.
Right. But you can ensure that that was not the intent, as Matt is saying.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So we'll make sure that the first part of that provision mentions that the owner, being us, would be responsible for paying the 5.5% or $100,000. And then the second piece is what Clerk Keller read. So we'll make sure that the owner responsibility is clearer
or whatever needs to be done.
Okay. Vance, is this JLL's contract or is this been negotiated? Is this document in our packet a negotiated contract?
Well, it was originally a JLL contract, but our Troy Wallace with KTJ negotiated several pieces of it. So a little bit of both.
Going back to financial interests and the complaint that we have in relation to conflict of interest, I do think I would like to have maybe a letter from JLL saying that our commissioner does not gain or have any financial interest involved in this.
He's no longer our commissioner.
Former commissioner.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, is that an issue? I mean,
Walt.
Yeah. I mean, why would we want to ask somebody that's our former commissioner?
There'd be no legal requirement.
Because they were part of the process and would help to maybe with the public who have this question stave off anything.
Well,
it's not a hard thing to do.
Okay, I'm not arguing with you, Erica. I'm just saying that's going to be hard to define because he's still an employee of the company. He's mm-hmm. still going to get some financial. One can argue he's getting financial interest because he's getting paid. So how would you look at
financial?
Is he going to get anything out of this contract? Is that what you're getting?
I think the Trustee Bachner would want us to have JL make a statement that there was no finder's fee or origination fee specific commission for the commissioner.
No direct financial gain.
Okay.
Direct or unique compensation.
I think that's a fair Erica. What's your thoughts?
Yes.
I mean, it's unfortunate that he's former, actually.
Yeah.
I'm mad about that. But.
So.
Any issues with that? Okay.
No, I don't.
I do have one more, just that it came today, not only from Beth Chang today, but also from an email about the provision about allowing density.
Yeah.
I think the phrase that bothers people is that it assumes a future development will be able to negotiate and makes it sound like they are guaranteed that negotiation. So, and I heard Beth Chang indicate that what she said, it should be in compliance also with what the neighborhood dialogues are coming. I'm okay with that, but also, do you want to change the will to may be able to negotiate so it's not guaranteed? Because I know you were...
Huh? That's just the presentation.
Okay, well, I'm just saying that's what people were arguing about or raising today. So I just want to address that issue because I don't want people to think that they will be able to negotiate. I mean, that they're guaranteed.
Successful. Correct. Yeah, yes. No, I think that's
that's
a very
getting interpreted,
valid point. So I don't think there's any use in necessarily changing what that document is in the presentation, but the marketing materials that will be part of JLL's work will be
approved by us.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Correct. So by village staff will work closely with JLL on making sure that the expectations are clear. I spoke with Ms. Chang earlier today about neighborhood dialogues. We certainly want to share that and will share that with JLL so that they're fully aware. Even in our conversations, we had made them aware of community concerns and the fact of what's at stake here to fit the community. So, yes, it would be our full intent to make sure that there's no ceding of village authority or guarantee of variations or things. There's still all the
there's no deviation from our development
process. Correct.
That's what I was going to say. It's going to go through the plan development process anyway.
Of
overall.
Course, it's going to.
So
go through
I just want that to be clear again.
But I want to also say that I think the email we got regarding density. I mean, there again, without any updating zoning codes, I mean, it will go through a development review board and it will be a plan development and it will be based on individual
requests.
Requests.
Got it.
I mean, that's what that's how it landed at the zoning board. Is that they said it, there's no appetite to update the code, but apparently it will end up in the plan development review process. So that's why I thought it made sense for us to accept zoning board's decision.
Item 21 in the contract around confidentiality requires us to keep the contents of this agreement confidential for 2 years, which we've already broken. So.
No, but the other thing too is I was going to add there, Lance, put in subject to Illinois law because we're subject to the Open Meetings Act. We're subject to freedom of information. So people can FOIA this document no matter what. And so put that in there.
What they're looking at there is they want to be able to do their negotiations and not have everything become FOIA-able, and there'll be preliminary until it gets to the board level.
I mean, they're talking about this agreement that we've got in front of us.
No, I understand. Right. But any is subject to FOIA anyway, and the exception is there. So, and that's all we ask.
Well, this is the boilerplate that goes to privates and publics.
Right.
So, I mean,
but the state law exception is there. And so that's what governs.
But to be clear, it makes sense to add that phrase.
Sure.
I agree. Right.
And usually they don't fight it because they know it's a
problem. I mean, it's a good point.
Ready?
Okay. All right. Any other further questions? Then we'll go ahead and take the vote, please.
Trustee Brennan.
So I agree with going with a broker, and JLL is, probably a fabulous company, but I am concerned about the process for that we've gone through, and the process for the complaint and the potential appearance of a conflict of interest aside from the legal conflict of interest. And out of respect for our ethics commission, I'm going to say no.
Trustee Johnson.
I would say yes. And given the statements I made earlier, I also believe we can put in controls in the future to address every concern that you have. But we shouldn't bifurcate. We need to bifurcate the two issues to ensure that they actually accomplish the goals we want.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
For the reasons that Trustee Brennan have already mentioned, I do think that this is something that if we feel that we need to address it in the future, we should be addressing now with this contract. So I say no.
Trustee Gillis.
I say yes. I do like Trustee Bachner's idea about getting some sort of statement from JLL. I think it actually helps us as well as Walt to preserve the reputation of all parties. And I also believe that we should ask the Ethics Committee to make whatever changes they want to make. This is a separate thing to the ordinance, the ethics ordinance, and bring it forward to us to review it and a vote on it at a later date.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes, for the reasons that Trustee Johnson raised and the reasons I mentioned earlier. I also do agree with Trustee Bachner and her certification proposal. I think it's a good idea. And then to thank for all the historical information, Matt, you did with your village, I mean, with the village staff. And then again, I don't want the Ethics Commission to think that I'm blaming them for anything. And of course, they can bring whatever they want and request whatever they want. In terms of that, I'm not guaranteeing one way or the other. I look at everything at the time that it's presented to me. So with that, I am again voting yes for those reasons.
Okay, so it passed 4-2. So I just want to just wrap it up, and there's a lot of good conversation, and you're right. It's bifurcating the issues, and I'm talking to Chair Daly. She understands. She takes responsibility. The committee takes responsibility for missing that. They don't blame us or them. They just, it was a oversight, and they'd like to review it and amend it and come back to us for discussion. And I certainly encouraged her to convene her commission to do so. Now, saying that, we'll take it on as the responsibility and look at it. Again, I look at it as our responsibility. I see it as our job, and I think I appreciate all of us working toward that common goal, is doing our job and researching and talking to certain commissioners too, to make sure that everything goes smoothly. So I appreciate everyone's work and help here. And I got one question in terms of how we now close out the complaint, the ethics complaint.
Well, the complaints have been rejected through the discussion. There doesn't need to be a separate motion to.
No, I know. I'm asking you. Then do we send on file that this complaint has now been rejected? Or,
yes.
Okay. So that you'll put together, or
sure.
Okay.
Yeah. It's part and parcel of the discussion, because the ethics complaint is being proposed as a bar to the adoption of the contract.
Yeah, okay.
And so the discussion of adoption of the contract included a full discussion of the complaint,
mm-hmm.
both as it was raised in the public comment at the EDC meeting when the recommendation was made, and then subsequently in the two file documents, one on the night of the last board meeting and one on the afternoon of this board meeting, with the Ethics Commission meeting being in between.
Yep.
But those have been dealt with,
okay,
through the discussion here and rejected.
And that will be documented.
On their merits, right.
Okay.
And I'd like it noted that I don't feel like we have discussed the ethics complaint in full, or that we worked on it appropriately. It should have been a separate line item. Thanks.
No worries. Okay. With that, then I'll ask.
Motion to adjourn.
No executive session. So.
Adjourn. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
President Odusi.
Yes.
Meeting adjourned.